Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the most listened to radio show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to fundraising success, and practical nonprofit management advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders. Also a successful author, his books range from Successful Online Fundraising to Expert Nonprofit Management. Guests on the Nonprofit Coach are leaders in their field who share their insider tips and trade secrets in a conversational style both the experienced and novice will benefit from. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. This is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Click on Radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome here to the latest edition of the Nonprofit Coach. Thank you for joining us today. We've got lots of updates as part of page one for you today. As the announcer mentioned, when we get to our page two expert today, who is Rob Mitchell, CEO of Atlas of Giving, please call in at 347-324-3080 to ask your questions. You can also join us over in the chat room and ask questions there, or feel free to email me your questions at tedhart@tedhart.com. We've got a full show today. We've only got one more show before the holiday break, and I'll tell you more about that later on. We've got a very exciting guest next week as we wrap up before the holidays. But let's get started here on Page One News. As has been our tradition for the last few shows, we are also live over on Facebook, so you can join us at facebook.com/Ted Hart. You can also ask questions there if you would like. First up here on the Nonprofit Coach, and we will post this link over on Facebook for you, and that is from Nonprofit Management. Obviously, lots that we could talk about. This is not a political show, but the nation is reeling from unexpected outcome of the 2016 election. Whichever side of the ledger you were on, definitely was not what was forecast. So this article helps you think through, it's called Nonprofits in Limbo, Preparing for the Unexpected. And I thought I would just share sort of the final concluding note here from Deloitte Consulting, where they have concluded that directors of organizations should get out of the same old boardroom and should even look across borders to learn from approaches in different nonprofits and companies. Developing new skills and insights are essential for innovation and should be sought to create a questioning and challenging environment needed to imagine, inspire, and develop better outcomes and impacts. The final word here is complacency in uncertain times can be a killer. So we are going to post that link for you over on Facebook so you can follow along there. And then first up here on page one news, it's my pleasure to welcome back here to the Nonprofit Coach, the media and outreach manager over at GuideStar. Jackie Enterline is here with us. And Jackie, you've got the GuideStar Minute. Bring us up to date with what's going on at GuideStar.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ted. So we've been pretty busy over the past few months and also a lot going on in the pipeline for 2017. But since you were chatting a little bit about Facebook, one of our most exciting partnerships over the past month, I'm not sure if you're aware, but back in November, right before Giving Tuesday, Facebook launched charitable donations. And so we partnered with them at GuideStar, and they also partnered with Network for Good to launch a new tool called Fundraisers. So that's been really exciting, and basically Facebook is relying on GuideStar data to verify the legitimacy of a nonprofit. So you or I can go on and donate to some of our friends' fundraisers, or we can create our own for some of our favorite nonprofits. So we've
that
been really excited.
That is terrific news, and certainly gives a lot of confidence. How would nonprofit organizations who are listeners today make best use of that new partnership?
So definitely encouraging. Any sort of supporter to create separate fundraisers. You can also now, users can now donate directly through a nonprofit's profile page on Facebook. And also, key kind of point is through the verification process with the Facebook page, it links back to the GuideStar nonprofit profile. So it's just another reason to make sure you're keeping your profile up to date on all fronts.
Yeah, and we, as you know, here on the Nonprofit Coach, we always encourage nonprofits to be updating their information. Can you just kind of walk through the steps to make sure that all of our listeners today know exactly what that means and how they can do that?
Absolutely. So GuideStar has four different seals of transparency. So bronze is, filling out bronze is basic information, which is so you can be found. Silver is financial information to kind of show trust to your donors and key decision makers. Gold is more qualitative information, so theory of change and similar questions you'd find on an annual report or grant application. And then platinum, which launched back in May, so one of our newest seals of transparency, is metrics to show progress and results you're making towards your mission. So obviously,
and I will note to our listeners who know that I serve as the CEO of CAF America, Charities Aid Foundation of America, which specializes in helping donors make gifts outside of the United States to charitable causes, but receive a U.S. tax deduction. And we're very pleased to be certified as platinum.
Thank you. Yes, a more robust platinum profile definitely helps get in front of more donors and funders. So there's benefits to making it all the way up there.
For updates at GuideStar?
Yeah, so in line with the profiles, in 2017, we're launching the new profile standard. And so that's just kind of the best practice for collecting and sharing information. And this, our team partnered with a bunch of different nonprofits, funders, and other sector experts to kind of create a more robust and tailored profile, which will help increase mobile giving, increase nonprofit visibility, help better route donations directly to the nonprofit, and of course, to better help illustrate the work that these nonprofits are doing. And finally, in 2017, we're launching annual seals of transparency. So instead of just earning your bronze, silver, gold, or platinum, you are now going to be able to earn your 2017 bronze, silver, gold, or platinum. So that way, anyone viewing your profile knows it is absolutely up to date.
That's terrific. And we're posting over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Ted Hart, along with this show, the link directly to how nonprofits can update their nonprofit report so that they'll have that direct link.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we do host workshops where you can kind of get small group help, or we have a profile coach, which you can learn a little bit more about on that page, and it kind of gives you one-on-one help if you have specific questions about updating your profile.
Terrific. Well, really important updates today. Jackie Enterline, Media and Outreach Manager over at GuideStar. Thank you so much for your updates, and we look forward to your next GuideStar Minute here on the Nonprofit Coach.
Great. Thanks so much, Ted, and we'll chat with you in the new year.
You got it. Happy holidays. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, here on page one, George Hamilton from CFRE is here with the CFRE Minute. So, George, give us the latest update on what's going on over at CFRE, just making note again that here on the Nonprofit Coach, We are big advocates of CFRE and do encourage all of our listeners who qualify to sit for the exam and to become certified. So bring us up to date, George Hamilton.
Sure thing. Happy to, Ted. And I'd like to wish a happy holidays to you and all your listeners.
Happy holidays.
We're excited to welcome the 191 newest CFRE credentialed fundraisers in 8 countries around the world who successfully achieved CFRE certification in this final testing window of 2016. That just closed on November 30th. So including that new group of CFREs from the final testing window, we welcome 682 total new CFRE certificates in 2016, and that's up 9.5% from 2015. So we're still seeing steady growth in the number of people, you know, seeking out and achieving their CFRE certification year over year. The other exciting thing is that with that new class of 191 CFREs, it brings the total number of CFREs certified worldwide to over 6,000. So we'll be ending the year with over 6,000 CFREs around the world.
That is a very exciting number. Congratulations to everyone at CFRE. I know it's not always easy to find those people around the world who can qualify and then to walk them through the process. Just for you to know, over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Ted Hart, we are sharing the link of CFRE to apply for the new applicant. It's worth noting that one of the things that you can do over on the CFRE website is to create a free CFRE account. It doesn't mean that you're necessarily ready to sit for the exam. It doesn't mean that you're even necessarily committing, but it is free, and it's a way to get started down that path and to understand what it will take to complete that process. So that might be a good goal for folks in 2017.
That's absolutely right. The CFRE certification process is a two-part process that starts with an online application where the fundraiser would document their experience in the profession, their education, and also their professional performance on the job as a paid fundraising professional. And that application is absolutely free to start and complete online. The fee structure doesn't come in until one actually has completed the application and wants to submit it for approval to take the CFRE exam. And that is obviously step two of the process. I would encourage everyone to start that application and document their education, their experience, and their professional performance over the past 5 years.
Let's suggest that all of our listeners make a commitment to do that again, because it's free to get started and it's a great way to sort of start that record keeping, and then when you're ready, make the commitment to begin the actual exam process.
Right. Now for any of your listeners who may have, you know, made 2017 their goal year for CFRE certification, I just wanted to mention that the first testing window, the CFRE exam is offered during 4 testing windows throughout the year. The first testing window runs from January 15th through March 15th, and the application deadline for that window is the 5th of January. So if anyone is ready and wants to sit their exam during that first testing window of 2017, just start the year off with a bang and achieve that CFRE certification.
Sure.
Their application needs to be submitted by January 5th.
Yeah, good timing to get that done. And if not, the windows that come just after that, good to, I think, make it a goal for 2017 sometime in the next several months. What else do you have in terms of updates from CFRE for today?
Looking forward into 2017, we're very excited that we are putting the finishing touches on our application for ISO 17024 accreditation for the CFRE credential. ISO accreditation is really the global standard for personnel certification programs. The CFRE has been accredited under NCCA, which is the North American accrediting body, but the move to the ISO 17024 accreditation will really give the CFRE credential a lot more
global approach,
It'll have a much stronger global awareness of of the accreditation under that new accreditation banner. So that application is being submitted prior to the holiday break at CFRE, and we are looking forward to receiving that accreditation somewhere around the end of the first quarter of 2017. Also coming in 2017, we are working with our testing partner, Pearson VUE, to be able to offer additional test preparation resources for candidates, including the ability to schedule and write a practice exam for the CFRE. We're not exactly sure okay. when that's going to launch in 2017, but it is definitely on the front burner for 2017 to be able to offer the ability to write a practice exam so folks can, you know, start their study process and then measure where they are on a practice exam before they commit to writing the real and true CFRE examination.
Yeah, well, those are important goals, and certainly for the global standard moving towards ISO is one that we all applaud and look forward to you coming back here on the Nonprofit Coach and giving us a good word that's been obtained. That just continues the advancement of the CFRE credential. Congratulations on hitting 6,000. That's an important milestone, and certainly congratulations to all of the folks that have just received their CFRE. A good time to celebrate over the holidays, and for everybody who's listening today who's not yet sat for the exam and has been thinking about it, again, let's make that a goal for you to start the process and try to get certified in 2017. George Hamilton, CFRE, thank you so much for the updates today. We look forward to having you back here on the show next month and give us the first update of the new calendar year.
Great. Thanks very much, Ted.
You got it. Next up here on the Nonprofit Coach, and we're watching our clock here because we've got a lot to cover, is we're going to rush on over to page 2. Rob Mitchell is the CEO of Atlas of Giving, and he is no stranger here to the Nonprofit Coach. He has been one of our more popular regulars each year on the Nonprofit Coach, and that's because he brings a lot of data. Rob Mitchell is one of the most successful and experienced fundraising professionals and nonprofit executives in the United States. He has now spent 3 decades as working as a fundraiser, nonprofit leader, and innovator. He's also an expert in charitable giving economy in the United States. And that's really why we want to have him here back on the Nonprofit Coach. He has shared with us the 2016 report, volume 12. The reason that we've got him back here is to help all of our listeners plan for 2017. We want to get a little bit of that crystal ball and the data that Rob and his group base his work on. So welcome here back to the Nonprofit Coach, Rob Mitchell.
Thanks, Ted. It's always good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you here, and of course, as we started the show today, a bit of a shock to the system with the presidential election not quite going the way the polls had suggested that it would. Regardless of what side of the ledger you're on, we're all professionals and have to get our work done within whatever lies ahead. And that's one of the reasons why we like to have you here on the Nonprofit Coach, because you track data on a monthly basis. So just because we've always got new listeners and those who have been with us for a while, why don't we start off with just sharing with us what is the Atlas of Giving, what does it provide, and what are you tracking? And then we want to get right into what it is that your crystal ball is seeing.
Sure. The Atlas of Giving is what we do is we measure and forecast charitable giving in the United States by sector, so arts, education, religion, et cetera, by source, individuals, foundations, corporations, and bequest, and by states. And we update our information monthly. To do this, our methodology is that we have, over time, developed 65 specific algorithms that take into account economic, demographic, and event factors that affect charitable giving and their relative strengths for each of those sectors, sources, and states. Our to give you some idea of scope of how much information we're tracking, we realized early on that we were going to have to build something that did not exist, and that is a spreadsheet with almost a million cells in it. Your regular Excel spreadsheet can't handle what we have. We have 990,000 cells in our spreadsheet that we're taking our information from. And we update monthly because situations change. And the example I like to give is 2001 was shaping up to be a fairly robust giving year. And then we had September 11th and giving dried up. If you were a non-disaster charity, giving pretty much right. dried up for 6 months. So events change. This has been a very unusual giving year, actually. So maybe we'll have some time to talk about that.
Yeah, well, let me just share just a few updates because we want to get into your forecast. But looking back a little bit, 2016 is not over yet. But what we've seen already and what you're reporting is that church giving has declined slightly by 1.1%. But it's important because it's the largest giving sector, and it accounts for nearly one-third of all annual giving. Giving to environmental causes on the flip side of that are up 3.9%, but while it's a fast-growing segment, it's also one of the smallest giving segments. And then one of the things that we definitely want to focus on, because it, I think, continues to be a bit of a head-scratcher for a lot of our listeners, is the meteoric rise of donor-advised funds and what that actually means and why, from the position of this radio show, the growth of donor-advised funds is good news for charities and charitable activities, although many in the sector may differ from that. My view, and I know you and I have discussed this before, is that typically that view comes from the fact that they are a different animal, and even though they have a lot of money, you can't actually solicit them directly. And I think that donor advised funds become a little bit maddening maybe for fundraisers. But the secret there is the donors behind the donor advised funds, because they've already donated the money. And if you can identify within your donor population someone who has a donor advised fund, all you have to do is really convince them to advise a gift to you. You don't have to convince them whether or not they should give, because they already have. So let's talk about sort of those data sets and data points that you've pointed out in this latest report, and help us understand how that then positions you to give us the crystal ball into 2017.
Sure. Well, the first thing that I would say is that in our initial report for our forecast for 2016, we were actually projecting a decline in giving of 1.5%. Fortunately, that's not going to happen. And but through mid-year, when we got through June, we were pretty much flat in charitable giving. And there were reasons for that. One you've mentioned is election discomfort. I think all of us were nervous because of the two presidential candidates. We weren't sure what their positions were going to be related to charitable giving. We weren't sure about any of their positions. And so there was some election discomfort. There was also a lot of stock market volatility in the first half of the year. Janet Yellen instilled fear in us of rising interest rates.
Which is forecast to happen next week.
It is. There was a growing frequency of terror attacks in the first half of the year, and those are unnerving to people. Brexit happened in the first half of the year. That was groundbreaking, and remains to be seen how it's going to be implemented. But that could make a major impact on charitable giving in the U.S. Plus, we had the distraction of the Olympics, and we were also experiencing a slump in GDP. Now, that was mid-year. Since then, what we're showing for 2016 is that giving is going to finish at this year up 4%, actually 4.1%, for almost $500 billion, and to be exact, $497.29 billion.
Is your projection of what 2016 will end?
That's our projection for how 2016 will end, and based on the accuracy of our forecast month to month, it's going to be very, very close to that, which is very interesting, Ted, because if you look at the depth of the Great Recession, in 2009, giving totaled $316.47 billion. So since then, giving has grown significantly, and there are many reasons for that. One of the things that we're always interested in at the Atlas of Giving are the factors that affect giving and different aspects of giving, and their relative strengths. So just to give you an example, following the depth of the recession, as you will well remember, the stock market took off on a tear. And in doing so, what we noticed was that giving to colleges and universities, also environmental organizations and also human needs organizations, they were growing much, much faster than others. And it's because they rely on campaign kinds of givings and non-cash gifts. And so there was a lot of growth in those particular sectors, while other sectors that relied heavily on lots of small gifts from lots of donors were not doing well because unemployment was so high. And so churches, being a prime example, were not doing well. Big national organizations, the old 100-year organizations like the one I used to work for, the American Cancer Society, were not doing nearly as well as the environmental sector growth was doing or higher education giving was doing. And so what we've learned since starting the Atlas of Giving in 2010 is that it's not necessarily the economy in general that affects giving. It's how you raise money and who you raise money from and where their money is coming from. So as an example, if you fear becoming unemployed, or you are unemployed, or you have just recently become reemployed, your giving has stopped as an individual giver. That makes a huge difference because there's a lag. What we've found is that there is a 2-year lag between when a person has been unemployed and gets a new job and when they resume their giving. So that's just
And you're focused on individuals because they take up such a lion's share of the overall giving sector. Not to say that foundations and corporations aren't significant, but as a percentage of what shifts the needle, individuals are very important.
It's 74% of all giving. So individuals are hugely important. Foundations, corporate giving, this is one of those things you can take into a bar and win $20 on. When you ask the person sitting next to you, where do most gifts come from? Most people are most uninformed people not working in the nonprofit sector would say they come from corporations. Only 5% of all gifts come from corporations. And so, yes, you're right. Individuals are huge, they continue to be huge.
And it's actually a larger if you take into account that all bequests come from individuals. So when you add that in, you're talking about 80% of the giving market. So I think for our listeners, you know, a takeaway here is when you look at your giving program, are you focused 80% of your time and is 80% of your money coming from individuals? That's not to say the foundations and corporations are not important, and you have a story to tell about foundations and a reason why giving for foundations has grown.
Yes, that very interesting, and the same, and the, some of these same things I'm about to tell you apply to donor advised funds as well. Foundations, as you know, have a requirement to give away at least 5% of their assets each year. The interesting thing is that since their asset portfolios have risen dramatically as a result primarily of the stock market, foundation growth and giving has been truly remarkable. What's also interesting is that foundations, like charities, their reporting mechanisms are not instantaneous. And so for a foundation that has experienced a huge bump in their asset portfolio, it might not express itself in terms of grants to actual end-use charities until 2 or 3 years later. So there, mm-hmm. there is
because
a lack.
Of the way that they because of the way that they use perhaps the a certain percentage over a rolling 3 to 5 year average as opposed to just a single year.
It's that, and it's also how long it takes them to report and
to
file their IRS returns, when their fiscal year ends. All of those things enter into the equation.
So your forecast for end of 2016, and we're nearly there, is that foundation giving will be up 6.9%. So again, for our listeners today, taking a look at what metrics you might be measuring yourself against, is our foundation support roughly around 15% of your giving, and did that grow this year by roughly between 6 and 7%? Is that a fair estimate?
You're right on.
Okay.
You're right on.
We're going to take a very quick break, Rob. When we come back, I want to start the crystal ball. I want to give our listeners some good planning tools as they're all listening intently on what you suggest is going to happen and what should their fundraising plans look like going into the new year. And we'll be right back.
Life gets busy. Wouldn't it be nice to have a central place where you could save what's on your mind? With Google Keep, you can stay on top of your world by quickly and easily organizing everything you want to remember. No matter where you are,
finalize door list for Thursday's gig.
So when you find inspiration, you can file away your ideas. And Google Keep stores them safely across all your devices. And when the time comes, you'll have everything covered. Save what's on your mind. Google Keep.
And grab your calendar next week, December 20th at 12 noon Eastern. We will have our final show for 2016. And, of course, we always wrap up our calendar year with the insights, wit, and wisdom of Kay Sprinkle Grace. And she is with a principal of Transforming Philanthropy. She will be back here, and her show is always one of the most listened to live shows and podcasts that we have here on the Nonprofit Coach. So mark your calendar. Live here on the Nonprofit Coach next week is Kay Sprinkle Grace.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on radio links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And we are live here with Rob Mitchell. Rob, we've posted over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TedHart. A link to atlasofgiving.com. So can you, before we went on the break, I sort of teased everyone to stay posted here, because what we want to ask you to do is give our listeners a look into the future and some good points that they can use internally to their organization on how to plan for 2017. What's it going to look like?
Actually, what we're projecting right now is that, as we've already reported, our calendar year 2016 is going to end up with giving growth at 4.1% nationally. For the next 3 months, we're projecting giving growth at 7.9%. For the next 6 months, 6.9%. That is aggressive. Now, and then for the next 6 months, 6.2%, and for the next 12 months, 4.2%. So it would be essentially the same growth over 12 months that we've had over the last 12 months. Now,
but you're
suggesting
that 2017 is going to come out of the starting gate very strong, and the first half of the year is going to be the strongest period. So practically, how would our listeners integrate that forecast, that crystal ball, into their operations? What would you recommend they do in
the first part
of the year to ride that wave?
Here's some practical tips. Number one, check the Atlas of Giving each month, because we update the forecast. As you know, if a terror event occurs, if there's some sort of political event that occurs, you know, there's talk about the president-elect's tax policy and eliminating the estate tax. There's talk of him reducing the capital gains tax, which would have an impact. And so I would just encourage the listeners, first of all, to keep up with, we like to say, we have our finger on the pulse of American philanthropy. And mm-hmm. there's a reason that we update monthly, and that is because situations change. So that's the first thing I would say. Secondly, I think very practically, whatever you did this year in terms of budgeting, and you know, each organization has a different fiscal year, and but if what you did this year worked out to about 4%, then I would budget for next year based on 4%, plus or minus mm-hmm. 2, whether you're conservative or aggressive. We've come way past the day of a CEO sticking a wet finger in the air and deciding what growth was going to be, because what we know now is that it doesn't matter how good your team is, how good your programs are, how good your solicitations are. What's really driving giving are these economic, demographic, and event factors. And so keeping in touch with
the Atlas is
important.
Yeah. Rob, I mean, I just want to jump in and just, you know, remind everyone that, you know, what sets your work apart is this wide range of factors that go into your projections and your data, but that you're constantly updating that. You're not just looking backwards to the year, but because you create trend lines on a month-to-month basis, you're able to see those trends perhaps quicker than have been found in the past. And I think one of the trends that, you know, you don't have to be an Einstein or you know, have a degree to figure out that one of the biggest opportunities right now for nonprofits, if you are not speaking to your donors about the transfer of appreciated stock at this point, you're missing an opportunity, because your donors will avoid the capital gains. Stock market is up appreciably. They can transfer that stock to you. You potentially get a larger gift than you might otherwise, and it's going to cost your donors less to make that gift right now than if they if the stock market goes down in the future. So that's one big opportunity that you can start right now during the holidays. If you're not already planning on it, get something out quick. But as you're saying, you're seeing a big uptick early in the year. So the first half of 2017, you need to be aggressively out there communicating the value of giving to your organization. Because again, Rob, you're seeing in your data that that's going to be a period of time that donors are going to be particularly available, perhaps, to give.
Agreed. And I would say because of what has happened in the stock market since the election results have come in, I mean, we are continuing to set new records almost daily, and this is going to have an impact on foundation grants for as many as 3 to 4 years. And so mm-hmm. if spending some time on working on foundation grants, this is the time to do it, because their asset base is going to finish the year higher than it's ever been. And so filing for going after those foundation grants is going to be important. Same thing on donor advised funds. And donor advised funds, in my opinion, have been the greatest economic change agent in the charitable giving economy since the mm-hmm. recession. Now, as you well know, because of your CAF experience, donor advised funds are not new. They've been around since 1968. But what happened was somebody clever at Fidelity first started to see an opportunity, and then Vanguard and Schwab followed, and now we have organizations like CAF, like the Silicon Valley Foundation, like the National Jewish mm-hmm. Federation, that are using successfully donor advised funds. And the crack on donor advised funds is that there are some people the critics are saying, well, you can just park your money, you can take your tax deduction in the year that you make your gift and then never give your money away. Well, if you look at the rules of these donor advised funds, almost all of them have a rule that says that can't happen. You cannot have a perpetual donor advised fund. Your money has to be given away at some point. And right now, foundations are giving away a little more than 5% of their assets. Donor advised funds are giving away 22% of their assets in grants to end-use charities. Well, all you have to do yep. is the math. And if you right. figure that,
and I think that would
know,
be,
unless,
I honestly think that number, as impressive as that number is, that number would go up if the fundraising community were to begin understanding exactly how donor advised funds work and communicating with their donors. I mean, one question that I have for fundraisers is, do you know all of your major donors who have a donor advised fund? Have you asked that question? Because helping guide them to give to your organization through a donor advised fund is one terrific way for you to increase the giving that you are going to receive.
And there's so many because donor advised funds are so flexible, there's so much that people can do with them. If for example, I had a donor advised fund and my goal was to build a new specific building or start a new program at my university. Well, I don't have enough money now, but mm-hmm. I can use a donor advised fund very effectively to invest for growth and to make additional contributions over the years, so that hopefully at my age, before I pass away, I would be able to satisfy the goal that I have of building that new building or building that new program at my university. Another great thing about donor advised funds is it's a terrific way for donors to pass along to their children and grandchildren how you use philanthropy effectively and how you make choices about who you give to, mm-hmm. Which I think is hugely important. I have, as you well know,
which
I'm a bit
all
of a provocateur.
Right, which are all benefits that the super wealthy have had, for many, many decades in creating family foundations and private foundations. And now what donor advised funds have done is really made that more available throughout the country to families of all sorts of levels of means to be able to be thoughtful and strategic in their philanthropy. So you and I both see the wave and the growth of donor advised funds as a positive, but I think, you know, there certainly is room for a lot of education in the nonprofit sector on how do you successfully communicate with donors who have donor advised funds to increase the fundraising to your organization.
Yeah, and I would say now we actually have, you know, one of the wraps on donor advised funds is that it's difficult to figure out who has a donor advised fund. But I don't have any stake in this person's enterprise. I'm going to tout somebody who has come up with a way that you can identify who has a donor advised fund, and that's Gregory Warner. So
okay.
I would encourage people to go to his website and to check out his product. I don't even know what the product is called, but he's come up with a way that you can identify who a donor advised fund donor is. And you have to keep in mind too that while everybody's, you know, the big news in the Chronicle of Philanthropy lately has been that, Fidelity Gift Fund or Fidelity Charitable has the top spot in the Philanthropy 400. They've just displaced United Way. Well,
that's right.
That's true, but it's also an opportunity, and most community foundations are also operating donor advised funds. So it's not as difficult. I think you're dead on, Ted, when you talk about how we communicate with our donors. And I think one of the things we have to assume, especially from some of our major gift donors, is that they actually have donor advised funds, and they can use them for our benefit as fundraisers at a particular charitable organization or church. So
that's right.
I'm a big, big, big fan of donor advised funds. I think the critics of donor advised funds have a solution in search of a problem, because there's
That's right.
not a problem.
Well, I think it's a problem in their mind, in that they see donor advised funds growing, and in their fantasy mind, all of that money would be in the hands of charitable organizations working on the ground, as they say, and that simply the statistics just do not show that is the case, because a lot of these families who have created donor advised funds have done so specifically because they wish to be more strategic and thoughtful in their giving. They don't own those assets, so there's no benefit to the donor to create a donor advised fund, and there's no requirement for a donor to create a donor advised fund. The reason the donor advised funds have grown so dramatically is because they are useful and helpful to the donor community. So let me just give an example, just because I want to drive the point home, particularly with the rise in the stock market, and always giving very practical advice to our listeners on how they can specifically make a case to their donors that they should make a contribution now. So if a donor were considering making a contribution to your organization, and let's say that you were going to ask them for $100, Rob, okay? And you could say to your donor that if you would give me $100, it will only cost you $65 to do so. How many of your donors would find that to be a really good deal? I think they'd want some details, because they would think, well, there's something fishy going on here. No. What it is if they contribute appreciated securities, which the stock market has been growing tremendously, particularly here at the end of the year, and they avoid the capital gains tax and the income tax on the donation, the net cost to that donor is going to be just $65 depending again on their own tax situation. So that's part of what I'm talking about here, and if there's a donor that's out there who's thinking, well, I'd like to get that savings, but I don't know where I want to give, or I want to take my time, then taking that same $100 and contributing it into a donor advised fund, or $100,000 into a donor advised fund. They get the immediate tax deduction, and then after the holidays, when it's less busy and less hectic and family is taking up all their time, they can then go back to that donor advised fund and say, you know, here are the five charities that I would like you to send a contribution to, and they advise those gifts to those charities when they have the time, rather than having to worry about, making a decision during one of the busiest time and most hectic times for most people. So how does that dovetail into your practical advice? And again, wanting to make sure that all of our listeners today make benefit of your crystal ball forecast.
Well, there is one thing that I've left unsaid, and that is things like November Giving Tuesday on November 29th, Giving Day that comes in the spring, and year-end giving, in my opinion, are about the worst times you could get out there and try to raise money, because it's essentially my analogy is it's the same thing as every network, whether it's a cable network or a standard network, putting their best show on the television on at the same time that the Super Bowl is taking place. The competition is tremendous. It would be better, in my opinion, if organizations would consider having their own giving day, because what happens is it's essentially based on your social media anyway. It's email, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, and so forth. And what most people are failing to recognize is that their donors are not just giving to them, they're giving to an average of four organizations. And so those donors are being hit by those four organizations at the same time. And so the amount of the gift that they're getting, while they might get a gift, the amount that they're getting would be more if they had their own giving day at a different time.
Being
of year.
Up. I think that's such an important point that you make, because, you know, the quick gift that's given when the donor doesn't have time to consider is not necessarily the maximum gift that you could get if you were thoughtful and had more time with that donor. And in some cases, particularly with large donors, what I have cautioned fundraisers against is settling for what I might affectionately refer to as sort of the go-away gift. You know, yes, I'm interested. Yes, I care about you. Here, take this money, go away. I'm busy right now. Whereas taking time and talking with those donors over a longer period of time, or, again, asking if they have a donor advised fund, finding out that they have a donor advised fund, and working with them to advise a gift to you could make many multiples of the gift you might have received.
That's a great point, Ted. And I'll give you one anecdotal story from my past, which is absolutely true. I was working with an organization on our capital campaign, and we were discussing prospects. And one of the prospects we were discussing was a person who was very, very generous, was a known philanthropist, but his maximum gift that he'd ever given any organization was $100,000. And he had done that multiple times. And I asked our campaign committee and our board if any of them knew him personally, and there were several of our board members and committee members that did, but one in particular was a very good friend of his. And I said, we needed $6 million for a naming gift for a particular building. And I was told by most of the people in the room, oh, he'll never do that. He only gives $100,000 at a time. But this one gentleman stepped up and he said, if you will help me prepare to go ask him for the $6 million, I will go do it. And so we put together all the ancillary materials. I didn't go with him. I just prepared him. I prepared him for what questions were going to be asked. So he walked in the room. He asked his friend for $6 million. His friend said, I am all tapped out for this year. And because of the preparation that this guy had gone through, he said, that is not a problem. You can start your pledge payments next year. And so he made the $6 million contribution. So you're exactly right. I mean, there are people out there that we have put in a box that we've considered, oh, well, this is the most they'll ever give. But we've not really worked with them. And when we talk about things like Giving Tuesday or year-end solicitations by mail or by telephone or by email, it's a cop-out, because what you're talking about is a face-to-face conversation where you actually get to know the donor. These other
and I think you're in some cases giving a lot of credit where, you know, we'd like to put credit, but I think a lot of our listeners have to admit that perhaps they don't even have that much planning on the solicitation and are relying on, you know, things like direct mail or phone calls or special events. And the real key here is, again, going back to getting to know your donors, understanding who has a donor advised fund and who does not, what they give to and when they like to give, and how to make that solicitation. And yeah, that's a lot more work, and it takes a lot more time. But time and time again, there's nothing new about this in fundraising. That's where the payoff is.
It is where the payoff is. And if I could make a suggestion, having come from a large national charity that relied on millions of small gifts from millions of donors that did lots of special event fundraising, what I would say is diversify. Now is the time to diversify. And whatever product you choose to use to put your donor base through, so you can identify stockholders, significant stockholders in major corporations. Mm-hmm. You can find out who your best prospects are and begin to diversify, because one of these days, you know, unemployment's going to go south again, and it's going to affect you if you're relying on lots of those small gifts. But if you have the diversification to go for some of the larger gifts, go for some of the foundation grants, go for some of the donor advised fund grants, then you can even out your charitable giving income for your organization. And I think it's so important to diversify.
I want to thank you for that, because, you know, without either one of us planning it, we sort of brought this show full circle from where we started on Page One News with that Deloitte Consulting conclusion that complacency can be a killer, and looking for new skills and insights is going to be the key for the new year. I'm looking at our time here. We've just got a little over a minute left here on the show. So I want to thank you very much for your time. I want to ask you to make sure that our listeners know how to reach you.
It's very easy to reach me. My email address is rob.mitchell, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L, at atlasofgiving.com. And you can also reach me through our website. You can place a phone call to the office, and I'm very good about returning phone calls.
And we have posted
calls,
that link over on Facebook at facebook.com/TedHart with our live feed today. So, Rob, thank you very much. I think, in conclusion, if you agree with me, you know, one of the biggest takeaways is this is the year to diversify. As you said, this is the year to not just have your fundraising program be a replication of last year. This is the year to shake things up. This is the year to learn how to work with donor advised funds. There's a lot of money in donor advised funds, but what that requires you to do is to actually get to know your donors, because the key to fundraising from these very large donor advised funds, including CAF America, which I serve as CEO from, is the donors who are the investors in those donor advised funds. They are the ones who make the advised gifts. So, Rob Mitchell, Atlas of Giving, thank you again for bringing your wisdom here to us and helping us plan for 2017.
It's always an honor, Ted, and thank you for the opportunity.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio
Happy
Show
holidays, Rob.
With Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.